Checkerfin.
Fordham is always in my head.
Checkerfin. Checkerfin.
Yes.
It's the education gadfly
sex,
show.
Sex.
Mike and Rick tell you
early college, high school, pain and suffering,
in your face, in your face,
your
face.
Listen to your word that they be preaching, cause here's the education gadfly show. Yeah. It's the education.
Hello, this is your host Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, here with my co-host, ever so intelligently designed, Rick Hess.
Hey, Mike. I like that. Yeah. I like that.
How are you, Rick?
I'm doing good.
You enjoying the holiday season?
I am. I'm, enjoying the vibrancy and the shopping dynamic and the lights on the streets.
Vibrancy.
Well, I like the vibrancy.
And the shopping dynamic. Do you a lot of Christmas shopping, holiday shopping?
Not so much.
Hanukkah shopping?
Yeah. And for Hanukkah, we don't really do the gifting thing so much anymore, thank God. And a little bit of online ordering and then call it a day.
Okay. Yeah.
How about you?
Okay, I thought last year, didn't your then girlfriend, now fiance, I thought she ordered her own Christmas gift. Line.
She did. She did. Yeah. And she didn't wait for me to get home. She didn't wait to show him to me, put in the new earrings. And I think a week later, she was like, oh, by the way, my Christmas gift came.
So are you going to step it up this year and buy her a Christmas gift yourself?
We're working on it. We're trying to figure out. I have trouble kind of distinguishing men's from women's apparel and jewelry and ugly from it's all complicated.
Huh. All right.
But how about you? Now, what are you and Megs doing?
The big thing is we've got a baby, and so we're exhausted all the time. And so we haven't done too much shopping. In fact, her mom came over last week to do the Christmas thing, and we just couldn't handle it. We just weren't ready for it. So, all right. Well, hey, on more important topics, a big piece of pop culture came out today. Huh?
There were really two.
Okay.
One, of course, is that Oracle surprised dramatically on its fourth quarter earnings and popped 9%.
That's not what I'm talking about.
The other is that Britney Spears' little sister got herself knocked up like a cheerleader by her 19-year-old boyfriend. And Jamie Lynn Spears, of course, is 16.
Wow.
So, Mondo, congrats to the role model and hero of whatever her Nickelodeon show is.
And she's got a show and everything. See, I don't even know this.
Yeah, Zoe 101. That's what it is. Zoe 101.
So, are charges pending against the 19-year-old?
You know what? That is a really interesting question. I have no idea. Mm-hmm. But I am glad to see that the Spears family continues its fine tradition of using its visibility to really set a healthy example for America's, young women.
Well said, Rick. Well said. Okay, let's get going. That's enough wasting time. Let's get into the program. We're going to play some Pardon the Gadfly.
Okay.
We're going to have an interview with Jeffrey Kuhner.
And Jeffrey Kuhner is who?
I'm glad you asked. Jeffrey Kuhner is our newish communications director here at Fordham. He's got a brilliant mind, especially about all things politics. We're going to talk about the campaign a little bit.
Okay.
And then we Liam will impart some education news of the weird.
I know that there was a lot of demand for a follow-up with Tom Lovelace after his inspiring presentation last week.
People want more Tom.
They do. They dig Tom.
They love the Tom Lovelace.
They love the less.
They love the less. We'll get him on some more.
Okay.
All right. Christina is already off for a holiday vacation, so we've got to deal with Kobe again this week. Kobe, you going to have your A? Bring your A game today?
Sure.
All right. Then let's get going.
All right. The Dallas Incentive Pay Program. Apparently, $6,000 isn't enough to lure good teachers to bad schools. Should we be surprised? How much is enough?
These are good questions. I think $6,000 seems like you're starting to get into the lower range of what might be a feasible number if the stuff's well constructed. Fact is, though, if somebody was going to offer to take you or me from a happy, pleasant think tank, for a 12 or 14% pay increment, to a think tank where things were miserable and our colleagues were in a bad mood and people had pretty unpleasant pretty unpleasant work conditions. That's probably not enough in and of itself. The question of how much is enough is going to be real interesting. And I don't think it's just a dollar figure. I think it's what are you doing with the dollars and how are you kind of providing the support and and using that, in conjunction with an environment that teachers are going to want to be in.
I know. And that's always the answer, right? As well, it's not just the dollar amount is changing the working conditions. I feel like that's the case with any of these teacher quality reforms, mm-hmm. right? And that's what gets kind of frustrating is that we think about trying to have a special, especially federal program to target these kinds of initiatives. And yet, it doesn't do a lot of good unless you change the school itself. Doesn't that just get us back to this whole idea that we have to think about comprehensive school reform?
That's right. That's right. But, the problem is that the apologists then take it too far. So you can certainly imagine that folks who are making, you know, $85,000 or $90,000, which is a lot of money, passing on opportunities to make a lot more money, opportunities to make $130,000, $140,000 by going to a new firm or taking a promotion. This happens every day because they're not comfortable with the new responsibilities, they're not comfortable with their new colleagues. So it's not unusual for people to decide that they like kind of their colleagues and their work conditions more than they'd like some extra bump in money. Problem is, you know, again, this kind of gets us back to the themes of charter schooling in a sense. Mm-hmm. It's about creating places where people feel they can do good work and feel that they're valued. Mm-hmm. And money's part of that. But money, you know, it's a mistake to think that money can stand in for all the rest of it.
Well, one last word is maybe then we should focus this on high poverty schools, but not necessarily low performing schools. Mm. In other words, you know, don't create these perverse incentives for schools to be low performing in the first place. You know, if you've got a KIPP school that is very needy but is performing well, I think say, hey, if they could use the money to recruit even better teachers, I'm all for it.
That's right.
Okay, Gobi.
Topic two. The president signed the latest Head Start bill into law last week after Congress passed it overwhelmingly but without most of the reforms he called for, like accountability for results, a block grant to the states, and the inclusion of faith-based providers. How come wonks hate Head Start while politicians love it?
Well, this is really depressing. You know, this was one of the president's major domestic priorities when he came into office, was to reform Head Start. And he has now been beating the drum for 4 years, and this was an utter defeat. He got virtually nothing that he wanted. And in fact, some of the things that he put in place through regulation that his associates put in place through the HHS department through regulation in terms of a reporting system to see how well four-year-olds were learning to read, for example, that too got stripped out in the law. So it's hard to see this as anything but a defeat. But the bottom line politically is it is impossible to be against Head Start. Everybody thinks it's a great program. It's got, you know, a great name. It's for little kids. And it's very hard to be honest and say, you know what, this program's not working.
Well, and I mean, the reality is that wonks aren't on the whole critical of it. There's, you know, very kind of distinct opinions within kind of the research and the policy community. And a lot of folks say anything that's going to get more money and more resources to this population is a good thing. So it's not at all, you know, you can walk down the street and real easily find a whole bunch of professors and advocates who are willing to make the case for Head Start.
Really? But I thought it's pretty well known that while there are a handful of preschool programs that have led to dramatic benefits cognitively that then show up, you know, in lifetime, that everybody agrees that the Head Start effects basically wash away after a few years.
Well, partly depends how you measure the Head Start effects. I mean, a lot of folks who are talking about readiness to learn say, look, it's not just about kind of these measurable indices downstream. But, you know, the reality is that, you know, the Head Start proponents never have trouble finding wonks and advocates who are willing to testify on the Hill and making the case for Head Start. And as long as that's the case, it's easy for them to say, well, the academics are of two minds on it.
Okay. Kobi, last topic.
This week at the Fordham Fellows finale, Edgewonk Andy Rotherham argued that teachers' unions are stronger now than they were in 2000, and the Bush administration is to blame because it beat up on teachers, especially through NCLB implementation, and thus gave them something to organize around. Is his analysis right?
This is an interesting. I hadn't heard Andy make this point before. I think it's an interesting argument. You know, that's not an unreasonable hypothesis. Another way to spin it is that because of the way the Bush administration played NCLB, that they were able to peel off much more dramatically than was the case in 2000, Miller and Kennedy and the Ed Trust from the teacher unions. So you can argue that the teacher unions are taking much more opposition within kind of elements of the progressive community than was the case in 2000, and that the Bush administration actually was integral to kind of making that to working the politics of that.
Well, let me ask you this, Rick. The first question I asked at this panel the other day that Andy responded to was, do you think the unions are stronger now than they were in 2000? So how would you answer that question?
Well, I mean, I think it's the case that they have been able to organize more energetically the membership. But this point about I think they're taking fire from the progressives and from the left much more directly than they were 8 years ago and a lot more of it. Mm-hmm. And I think this is partly the result of the Bush administration's negotiations and positioning on the education issue. And I think that has weakened the unions to some extent, that they're not as monolithic a presence in the Democratic Party as they were 8 years ago. So whether that's a wash or whether Andy's right, that's a tough one to kind of sort through.
Well, see, I think there's some truth to it. I mean, there certainly were mistakes that we made when I was in the administration. Certainly, Secretary Page likening the NEA to a terrorist organization didn't help on that front. And they did use that quote to organize a lot of teachers. I saw a poster in George Miller's office once that had, you know, a bunch of quotes from the Bush administration. That one was front and center, saying, you know, do you know what they're saying about us? But that said, I think that, you know, so we could have done more on style, but the substance was always going to anger them. And back in the days when candidate Bush was saying that, you know, we had to attack the soft bigotry of low expectations, it seemed to me that people like Andy and Katie Haycock and others were cheering Bush on. And yet he was, in effect, calling teachers soft bigots, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I don't think that if you're willing to stand up and say, look, there has been this soft bigotry of low expectations, we're going to force you to be held accountable. I just don't think teachers' unions are ever going to like that, even if the message is from somebody with a smile.
Well, I think that's a given. And the question of whether this then makes unions stronger is it certainly makes unions more active and energetic. Whether that actually translates into real strength mm-hmm. is an interesting question. How do you measure strength? Is it number of members? Is it amount of money flowing in? Or is it kind of softer measures of influence in D.C.? And so I think, I think the calculus here is that Andy makes kind of a really interesting point, but whether on balance the NEA is waving a stronger hand, holds a stronger hand is kind of an open question.
Okay, great. It is that time for our interview of the week, this time with Jeff Cooner. Let's take a listen. Joining us today on the Education Gadfly Show is Jeff Cooner, our newish communications director at the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Great to be with you, Mike.
So, Jeff, tell our listeners just a little bit about your background, how it is that you came to work at the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation.
Well, I mean, I have a journalism background. I started off at the Washington Times. I spent 3 years there, did a lot of editing, did a lot of writing, pretty much got tired of the deadline grind, went off to the Ripon Society, which is a centrist-leaning Republican, or was anyway, a centrist-leaning Republican think tank. To my horror and chagrin, I basically saw why the Republican Party was going to lose in 2006 with all the pork barrel spending, the lobbyists, the corruption, the influence peddling. So I went back to the Times, spearheaded its weekly magazine called InsightMag.com, helped to revamp it, became a sort of online news site. And really, we just took it off. It just really took off. We got a lot of links on Drudge. I began to really acquaint myself with the internet world and with journalism done on the internet. We broke a lot of stories, annoyed the White House, annoyed Republicans on the Hill, and then we sort of turned our guns on the anti-war left, so annoyed them as well. So we pretty much ended up annoying everybody. And then after we annoyed everybody, I realized that, you know, I want a life. I don't want to be hated by everybody in this city. I saw an opening at Fordham. I said they do very good quality work on education.
And we try to annoy everybody in education.
Exactly. And I said, you know, look, I want to be a gadfly just like the Gadfly newsletter. I want to be a gadfly annoying everybody.
Okay. So we now know that Jeff is a bona fide journalist as well as now our communications director. So let's talk a little bit about the campaign and education. We've been talking a lot about how education hasn't been a top tier issue. And yet now we see some interesting dynamics. Mike Huckabee, for example, getting a ton of support from homeschoolers. What do you take from that?
I think it's a very interesting development. I think to me it shows that homeschoolers are becoming a political force, a potent force in this country. Mike, what you're seeing, I think, is that a lot of homeschoolers feel marginalized by the education establishment. They're looking for somebody who shares their values. Huckabee is obviously an evangelical Christian. He's somebody who they can relate to on pro-family issues, pro-traditional marriage issues, pro-life issues. And so he speaks to them and he speaks to their values. I think more importantly, Mike, this is what I think both Republicans and Democrats can learn from Huckabee's success with courting the homeschool community, which is this. Huckabee respects homeschoolers. He appointed a homeschooling parent to a State Department of Education. He speaks fondly and affectionately of homeschoolers. I'm personally not a big fan of homeschooling. Call me old-fashioned, call me traditional. I like to send my kid to a good public school or a good private school. But that's not the issue. The point is that you have a lot of parents in this country that feel that the school system, especially the public school system, has let them down. And so they are now turning to homeschooling as a viable option. I think it's important for not just Fordham, but for all political candidates to support greater choice and competition. This is going to be the only thing that we can do right now to reform education, to bring out the best in our students. And so I think that Huckabee is tapping into that.
Okay, but at the same time, Jeff, Huckabee supports homeschooling. His support for vouchers is very much up in the air. The campaign says he supports it, although he's got a long record opposing it. Well, let's look on the other side quickly. Clinton has been racking up the endorsements from teacher unions all over the place. Is that going to, in the end, give her a lock on the nomination? How important is that teacher union vote on the Democratic side?
It's important in this sense that the teachers unions spend a lot of money and they contribute a lot of money on these campaigns. And they're giving a lot to Hillary. They're giving a lot to the Democratic National Committee. And I think in terms of building up her war chest, it's important. The problem, however, is that a lot of teachers, frankly, do not like Hillary Clinton. I know this for a fact. I have a lot of teachers in my neighborhood who speak to me, and what they're telling me is that she is just way too far left for them. They don't like her stance, completely opposing school vouchers. They believe that she's just a classic tax and spend liberal, that she's just somebody who's just going to throw more money into the education system without fundamentally fixing it. Look, teachers know what's wrong with the system. A lot of them know that you have classroom sizes are too big. You don't have a rigorous curriculum. They don't have a lot of control and discipline over their students. And that the unions in many ways are just a fundamental problem. And so you have this disconnect. You have a lot of teachers who don't like the union leadership. And so they resent the fact that unions, in fact, are taking their dues as teachers and using it for political purposes and basically being held hostage by the Democratic Party.
Well, and you know, a recent study in Education Next that looked at teachers' values in terms of religion and some of the other hot-button social issues and found that teachers were actually more conservative on many of those issues than the general public at large. And so, in that respect, the national unions, at least, and certainly the NEA, is out of step with the rank-and-file teacher on many of those kinds of issues.
You're right. I think Huckabee's appeal is that he is a cultural conservative and an economic populist. That's exactly how it characterized a lot of the teachers that I know. And you're completely right. I think that on a lot of issues, someone like Hillary turns them off. And someone like a lot of the Democratic candidates, and frankly, even some of the Republican candidates, take somebody like Giuliani. A lot of teachers don't like Giuliani because he's socially liberal and probably economically quite conservative. And so he goes against the grain of a lot of the values that a lot of teachers hold. And I think you're dead on. I think that's the appeal of Huckabee. He is a populist / social conservative.
And you could argue that Giuliani and some of the other candidates come off as being almost mean. And if there's anything that we know in general about teachers is that they are positive people. I mean, they spend their time trying to, especially at the elementary school level, teaching kids to be nice to each other. And I suspect that some of the mean-spirited stuff that you see, that image of a mean-spirited politician isn't something that's going to rub off well on the teachers. Well, that is all the time we have for today. Jeff, thank you for coming on the show.
Oh, my pleasure, Mike.
And I hope you and yours have a happy holiday season.
God bless you and your family, Mike.
So what do you think, Rick? Jeff makes some pretty interesting comments, don't you think?
Jeff's a smart guy. I dig that, man. You guys keep finding these smart people. How do you do that?
I'm telling you, we're going to take it to the next level in 2008.
Oof.
You're going to see it.
Pretty great in 08.
Pretty great in 08. Okay.
Mike, so who do you like? Who do you like in Iowa?
I am an undecided voter.
Who are you anticipating?
Oh, Huckabee's going to take Iowa.
And on the Democratic side,
I think that in the end, I think Clinton's going to pull it out.
And then in New Hampshire?
New Hampshire, I would... I think Romney will pull out New Hampshire.
Nerd alert!
And I think that Obama will come out in New Hampshire.
Really? So you think Clinton will take Iowa, but then Obama's going to come back, potentially New Hampshire?
I think so.
That could set it up interesting for South Carolina.
Okay. I'm just really making this up as I go.
I like that about you.
Okay. It is that special time, the time we wait for all week long. Education news of the weird time. With our special correspondent, Liam Julian. Liam... Last one of 2007. What's weird this week?
Two teachers at an elite school in Britain have been suspended after a teenager was tied up with electric cable during a class. The episode was captured on a student's cell phone. A source at the school told the Daily Telegraph, quote, "It was like something you'd expect in Guantanamo Bay or an Al-Qaeda video, but not in a school. The lad involved is an easy target for bullies, and he takes more than his fair share of stick." Unquote.
Wow.
What does that mean exactly?
I really don't know. Okay. I don't know if it's obscene or not.
But. So wait, but the teachers didn't tie up the kid then. He was tied up.
Well, unclear.
Ah. Okay.
The boy in question was said to be too upset to talk about what happened. John Patterson, the school's head teacher, didn't find the incident particularly upsetting, though. He said, quote, "I was conscious that the context appeared to be good humored as the children were laughing and the members of the staff were laughing and the boy was laughing." End quote.
So, you know, waterboarding is not torture as long as the victim is laughing.
Or as long as the torturers are laughing.
Right. So that's Education News of the Weird.
I feel like lately Education News of the Weird has been a little more about Education News of the Deranged, and it seemed like at one point, remember, it was sort of funnier and lighthearted. And
it's, I think, honestly, I was thinking about that today. There's less weird stuff, or maybe the media is covering weirdness in a different way.
Why is that? We had this great run with the teacher who did butt art. Mm-hmm. And that was great stuff.
And the Halloween graveyard.
The teacher who took her students to dig up a graveyard. Are teachers being more cautious lately? What?
We need it might be the policing influence of Liam Julian's beat here. They're saying, hey, we don't want to wind up in that spot.
I don't want to end up on the podcast. Yeah.
But I think this could be fodder for a stellar new Fordham Report in 08.
Mm-hmm. But education, getting less weird? ?
I like it.
We could do report cards on the weirdness of education in the 50 states.
We could grade it. We could grade the major local papers on how good they are at unearthing weirdiosity.
I like that. Who's got the weirdest education system?
Boom.
This is very promising. Well, that is all the time we have. This is the end for 2007. I hope that all you listeners out there enjoy your holiday season. We will be back in the new year. Rick, I hope you also have a nice holiday. I hope you take some vacation time.
Why, thank you, Mike. And I hope that you and Megan get a chance to enjoy time with little Nico.
We will indeed. And in January, a big event in Rick's life. We'll talk about that the next time.
Oof.
A big milestone.
Good Lord.
Has something to do with the number 4 and the number 0. All right. Well, until then.
Hey, I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, signing off.